John Ferguson, thanks for joining me today.
Thanks for having me.
I wanted to start off our little, you know, year in review conversation with asking you, you know, actually a couple questions about yourself, because I've interviewed you several times and I've never really found anything out about you as a person. So, I mean, I'm going to start with the most obvious question. What are you studying at Mount A?
Yeah. So I'm a fifth year student. I'm studying international relations, doing an honors in international relations. And I'm doing minors in environmental studies and French.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Yeah. And so what possessed you to decide to run for council president?
Yeah, that's a great question. There are a lot of different things, but the biggest thing was just that I really thought that it might be time for a different sort of approach than one we might have been seeing happening in prior years, and one that was maybe focused a bit more on what was happening internally at Mount Allison, you know, more kind of local style of leadership. And I thought that, you know, if I was going to be going around and saying that I thought this leadership style was needed, then I should, you know, put my name forward to give it a shot. And that's what I did. And incidentally, that was right before the pandemic. And so it turned out to be a year where we needed to focus quite locally anyway. So I've been able to put that into practice.
Right. Yeah. So any regrets?
Regrets? No regrets. Definitely surprises. I mean, nobody knew the pandemic was happening. We were doing, the elections and then the hiring process. And we got about halfway through that whole thing when the pandemic started. And so there was very few people that joined our team, even, you know, many of the hired positions of the MASU this year that, you know, did so knowing that there was going to be a pandemic affecting our operations this year. So it's been a challenge not only for me and for the entire executive and for the council, but for all of our staff as well. So I hope that there haven't been too many regrets throughout the team, but definitely no regrets on my end. It's been an interesting year, but I'm very proud of the work we've done.
So, you know, right off the bat, I mean, you mentioned COVID, and I definitely want to talk about that and all the sort of extra workload that's involved. But one of the first things, you know, well, soon after the pandemic struck, students found out there was going to be, you know, a fairly substantial tuition hike.
That's right.
So that sort of hit you probably as issue number one for you in 2020.
Yeah.
Remind us of what happened there.
Yeah, so the tuition hike was one of our first big issues as an executive, as a union. We were disappointed that it happened because, as I said, you know, at the time, this is something we're seeing happen throughout Atlantic universities. Even with COVID happening, you know, that was one big argument. This was going to happen regardless, and that's fair. I mean, that, you know, that was the plan, but that plan is not one we would have agreed with before the pandemic, and certainly not one we agreed with during a pandemic, because obviously the pandemic affected students' abilities to work. You know, back in March and April, things were so up in the air, so much more volatile than they are even today, and students were losing summer jobs, and so it was a huge concern for us. But we responded to it, you know, in a way where we really wanted to engage students. We launched that petition. We wanted to make sure that everyone was very clear, you know, between the students and those making the decision to increase the hike, that this is where students stood. We were not in favor of it, overwhelmingly not in favor of it. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that was definitely one of the first big sort of issues we had to tackle early on in our time as an executive.
Mm-hmm. And that tuition hike, it was like a 4.5%.
Yeah,
on average, I guess. Yeah. It's complicated in New Brunswick because mm-hmm. of
MOUs.
Various different agreements with the government to guarantee funding. So, depending on what year you start at Mount Allison, you could have had closer to a 5% hike.
Yeah.
You know, I haven't checked in lately. Do you know what's up with the next MOU kind of negotiations between the provincial government and the university?
That's a great question. I don't know any specifics right now. There's been discussion about whether there will be discussion sort of thing,
yeah.
But it's definitely preliminary stuff. Obviously, it goes without saying that we're in favor of reduced tuition wherever possible, and so that includes obviously New Brunswick students, and so we hope that there's going to be some progress with the MOUs coming forward. Yeah.
Yeah. Now, so COVID was complicated for so many reasons, but you know, one of the big things was students coming back to campus and what a big deal that was. When you look back on that, and we're sort of staring down the barrel of like it happening all over again now, although for some reason everyone seems so much more relaxed about it this time. I don't know if that's true when you're on the inside as you are, but at least the anxiety levels outside don't seem so high.
Yeah. But,
you know, what did you guys learn from September and, you know, stuff that you will apply to January, I guess?
Well, that's a great question. I want to start by just addressing the kind of, you know, lack of urgency thing you mentioned there. That's a really interesting kind of phenomenon that we've been noticing happening everywhere. And I actually think McLean's wrote an article about the other day that I was sharing on social media. It seems that there's just a huge lack of urgency kind of everywhere. It's really a fascinating thing to see how people are kind of, adapting to the slower pace of responding to things and preparing overall, not just, of course, on campus, but, you know, throughout the country. And I think that that's something we might be seeing here, but also partly there is a lack of urgency because of how well things went the first time. I think that, through careful planning, through widespread student buy-in for the programs that were being put forward for self-isolation, we know that it went well in August. It went, as well as anyone could have hoped for a huge experiment that had never been attempted before. And I think that we know we're saying in the winter, it's hopefully going to go equally well. The MASU executive is not directly involved in the self-isolation planning as we were in August. We were involved in that in August. Going into the winter, it's going to be the orientation chair and the other orientation chairs. We look forward to seeing what happens. I believe that outdoor time is going to be a thing again. It's going to be obviously chillier than it was in August, but that's a key thing. You know, that's something that we made clear to Mount Allison. We wanted to see, you know, happen. And at one point there was discussion about whether it might be temporarily suspended. And we were saying, no, it can't be. Like, it's students are saying, this is what is making this so possible. This is what's making it kind of, I know I don't want to say bearable, but I mean, you know, for some students, it's tough to be inside the res rooms for 2 weeks. For others, it was actually quite straightforward. I know there's some students that were just finishing up summer courses or online work, and they were saying, actually, it was great for me. I could focus finally because there's no distractions. But I mean, it's different for everybody. And that's what we want to always drive home, is everyone responds to all of the changes, whether it's self-isolation planning or, you know, course delivery. Everyone responds to those differently. So.
Yeah. And now, I guess, for this upcoming self-isolation period, students will be starting their courses even in week two of their isolation. Am I right there?
That's correct. Yeah, the first week of their courses and the second week of their isolation.
Yeah. Which does make sense. Like, if you ever had a time to be able to concentrate, that would be it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, you know, as we move on into the fall, we had a provincial election, got called on 28 days notice. And it was a bit of a shit show, for lack of a better term.
That's a good term.
Yeah. Tell us what happened.
Yeah. So obviously I can speak to what happened in our constituency. So what we saw was voter suppression, student voter suppression, short and simple. It was shocking and it was completely unacceptable. And I think the entire community agreed with that, that this could not happen. The chief electoral officer and an Elections New Brunswick ended up listening to our request to have some sort of investigation conducted, because what we were seeing at the polls was students being turned away. At the beginning, students were being asked before they even stepped foot into the building whether they were students, which is a very strange question and also completely inappropriate question. You don't ask someone what their profession or vocation is before they're going in to vote. You ask things like, are you a resident of New Brunswick, right? We saw certain students basically BIPOC students being asked if they were Canadian. Really awful stuff. Yeah. And so it was truly reprehensible behavior. It was an indication that people had no idea what they were doing, that there was a clear miscommunication during training, and that for one reason or another, those inappropriate questions were being asked to students and apparently nobody else. Obviously we only speak to students, but from what we can tell, these sorts of questions were not being directed at people who appeared to be residents. And I mean, this wasn't something that was just for out-of-province students. This was something that was happening to New Brunswick residents, too, to people as locally as students from Moncton who moved to Sackville, right, were being treated this way, and students from all over the Maritimes, but, you know, within New Brunswick, right? So it was really, really strange. I've never, you know, I study international relations and political science. I've never heard of anything like this happening in Canada, to the best of my knowledge. And this is something that I think a lot of people are still asking questions about. So the election was conducted. We were very closely involved in that election. Or, investigation.
The investigation.
Yeah, sorry. Excuse me, tripping over my words here. The investigation was conducted. We were closely involved with that investigation. I think it was about 20 students in total were interviewed. We're reasonably pleased with the results of it. It's clear that Elections New Brunswick took note of this, you know, realized it was more serious than I think they initially realized, undertook an investigation, basically concluded that there was a huge mistake that had happened in this particular constituency. And we didn't hear it happening pretty much anywhere else in New Brunswick during that election, right? But definitely in this constituency, mm-hmm. And the training needed to be improved. And so we're really glad that that, you know, has been publicly stated and shared, and it's going in, you know, for the next time an election is called, which is supposed to be 2024. Mm-hmm. And I hope that, you know, everyone reads that report and pays careful attention to this when we go forward, when Elections New Brunswick goes forward and does training in 2024.
Yeah, it's interesting. That's the question that still mm-hmm. hangs in the air for me about this whole thing. They will do, you know, Elections New Brunswick has said they're going to do training.
Yeah.
I mean, it actually seemed, you know, I was there on the day hearing some of the poll workers talking, and it really seemed as if they were trained in the opposite direction. And it took like repeating and repeating and repeating throughout the day. But the same people continued to insist that a 40-day, you know, the 40-day residency rule worked differently than it did. But anyway, I guess the question that looms for me about that is, why did it happen in Sackville and not anywhere else?
That's a great question.
You know, and is there, you know, there was an attitude, it seemed, that like, and just as you say, people being questioned when they walked in, if they didn't look like, you know, maybe a typical Sackville resident, whatever that looks like, but being questioned of who they were, you know, inappropriate questioning.
Yeah.
It's interesting. And that's one I think, you know, the town will have to think about a lot.
Well, yeah, I mean, if I can comment on that, I think that, you know, that is a great question. When you say typical Sackville resident, I think that a lot of Sackville residents look at a particular age range and think that, oh, this is likely, you know, someone of this age is likely here for a certain time of the year and not for the whole year, and have other questions about whether or not they're truly members of the community. And that's something that's quite stressful for students. It's something that students are very aware of. You know, students come to Mount Allison for the community, and many of these students, you know, in their first year or so, but they're trying to figure out what campus life is like. But then after that, they really branch out and they want to be bigger part of Sackville in their second and third and fourth and fifth year. And I, you know, have so many colleagues and friends that have, you know, stayed here year round to work and to be part of the community. They volunteered, you know, spent a lot of time with, you know, there's some great examples of the work that's been done with seniors too, during the really difficult, you know, months of self-isolation back in March and April and May, when it was kind of impossible to see anybody really. And so I just, you know, would definitely reiterate that students are part of this community too. And so moments like these sour the town and gown relationship. And I think it's important that we're really cautious and cognizant of that, because, you know, students want to be part of this community and remember to, you know, to continue to be active members of this community. And some alumni, especially this year, have even stayed in this community to work online, but to stay in Sackville. I definitely would drive that home and say that, you know, that's kind of what that was getting at too, was it was just another incident of this sort of this tension that's there that I think is improving. And it's definitely not to say that it's a tension that, you know, all students have with everyone in the town or anything like that. But there's just definitely that kind of underlying tension that came out potentially in that incident. And that's one thing that students took away from it. So again, very happy that that election concluded that there was an issue and said so publicly, and that we're working towards making sure that that we're seeing, you know, widespread respect and support for everyone who's part of our community.
Right. And hopefully on campus polling stations next year.
Yeah, hopefully that too. That
or
also,
not next year, but next election.
Totally. Logistically makes things quite easier.
Yeah. In addition to COVID and the election, there has been another massive issue rear its head on the Mount A campus this year, sexual assault. And it, you know, it seemingly came out of nowhere. We had a graduating student who just thought she needed to leave sort of her truth behind and let people know what her experience was dealing with, you know, the systems that are in place here at the university to deal with reports of sexual assault. that, you know, I mean, I guess I'll just let you speak to that issue a bit. How do you feel? How do you feel going forward with what's happening and what's afoot now?
Definitely. Well, I mean, I'll start off by saying that this is something that, you know, definitely, as you said, predates this year. It's something that the MASU has been working on throughout the last couple of years, addressing this issue through the rape culture working group that we had and that we continue to have. So that's something that, you know, we have been trying to raise to the community that it's been an issue. But to be completely fair, as you pointed out, it did sort of seem to come out of nowhere. It seemed to be quite a big thing very suddenly. And I think that that is something that we all share there, is that while everyone, I think, sort of knew that there was issues going on, nobody really understood the extent or the scale of how much of a problem this was until, you know, Michelle started with her posts on social media, which began this sort of, you know, snowball effect of people coming forward and sharing their stories. It was a very difficult process for a lot of students. That week was, you know, incredibly emotional for a lot of people. And I mean, you know, I've said it before and I'll say it again. I think Michelle was incredibly brave and wise to do what she did. And it's resulted in some pretty impressive change so far. I think the biggest thing we're seeing is the creation of this working group, which you are probably already aware of, which is going to be, you know, led by Michelle and by a faculty member. They're the co-chairs of this group. And that group is going to have, last I heard, over 50% of the members of this group are going to be students. And that working group is going to be leading the response, while there's also going to be, I believe, the university's had a third party coming in and basically going through everything to understand exactly what happened. And to the best of my understanding, this group will, you know, be giving their recommendation. And while the working group is also kind of, you know, considering these recommendations and recommending to the administration pass forward. So the reason I mean, obviously a lot of people already know about this, but I just highlight that for those that don't, because I think that that's a really impressive response from the administration, to be totally honest. You know, we were skeptical of what the response was going to be, but this is one that we can and do support. The MASU has its own ad hoc committee that's been formed with a lot of, only student members. And we're going to be working with one of our liaisons as well to, you know, support the working group. And there's a lot of work ahead for sure, but this is I think one of the best first steps we could have hoped for. And so we're going to continue to work with students, with a faculty and administration, everyone in the community, to make sure that this, that students have the supports they need, because it's very clear that they don't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it does seem, I got to say, having heard from the president of the university on this, that, you know, I guess the call is for whatever comes out of this process to be sort of, you know, the gold standard for Canadian universities, which is, I think, badly needed in all Canadian universities, honestly.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's a great point. Like, this is not something that, you know, tragically is not unique to Mount Allison. It's clearly a problem here. But I mean, we've seen, you know, this started at least locally in the Maritimes, similar movements on other campuses. And we're seeing that this is a problem throughout all Canadian institutions to varying degrees. And so I think this is an opportunity for Mount Allison to lead the charge in fixing this once and for all, not only for our campus, but, you know, as a model for other campuses. And in the meantime, I think one of the good short-term steps that's been taken has been the involvement of Crossroads. I'm not sure you've probably heard about that, but Crossroads will be opening up an office here for the second semester as a short-term sort of solution to the concerns raised by students, and then moving forward, based on the results of, you know, what the working group discusses, other changes will come forward for the fall. But that's, again, another, you know, great first step that's been taken that's going to address the issues that students are facing today.
Right. So that, yeah, they'll have that third party, that will be the service that's replacing what Share had been previously doing.
That essentially seems to be what, that's how I understood it too.
So I guess it's going to be a difficult process, but that'll be something to look forward to in 2021. Before I let you go, I want to ask, like, what other things has MASU been up to? I feel like there has been a lot of really big issues come up, and I'm sure that there's also kind of just more run-of-the-mill stuff that you guys are working on. So what else has happened with Massu in 2020.
Definitely. Well, I mean, thank you for asking that, because there's a lot of stuff that's been going on behind the scenes that we're excited to share. I mean, one is, I guess, an announcement I can make here. Our new website is going live this week. So completely redesigned website. In fact, we're actually launching two websites. We're separating the housing directory on its own website. It's going to be called massuhousing.ca. And meanwhile, massu.ca will be completely redesigned interface, much more user-friendly. And, you know, we did this because we realized that this year with COVID, people are spending more time online. They're looking for our resources more, you know, on our website than they would in a typical year, where they'd come into our office a little bit more frequently than they're able to this year, especially with so many online students. And that's one exciting thing we've been doing. We've been reorganizing a lot of our operating procedures. That's, you know, to students that aren't involved in the MASU, that's really boring. And most students aren't going to care about that. But I mean, our operations committees are working hard. Our committees overall this year have had a huge, huge turnout. We almost had too many applications to let people on committees. Like, we reached capacity and all of our, I want to say, over a dozen committees. So that would have been 8 or 10 members or so per committee. Some committees have fewer, some have like 15 or so members, I think. I have a big list in my office that I look at frequently, which is just another indication of the really high student engagement we're seeing this year. Like, the survey that I sent out regarding pass-fail, and that's another thing that, you know, we just finished there with pass-fail. We, you know, led the charge on that. Initially, there was a lot of skepticism about whether now was the time and place to do this. But, you know, I really think that senators, you know, I want to thank the senators that had that discussion and got into the details and the nitty gritty and said, no, this is what we got to do. You know, we're really happy that our recommendation that students can see their letter grades and then decide whether they opt into pass fail. We're really happy that that recommendation was adopted, and that's how it's working this semester. But, you know, student engagement overall has just been astonishingly high. When I sent that survey out on email last week, asking for feedback about pass fail, I sent the survey and I went and I poured a glass of water and it came back and I hit refresh. And within 6 minutes, I think there was 200 responses. So 10% of the school in 6 minutes, you know, we're seeing really high engagement, and it's really heartwarming to see how much students want to get involved with their own union this year. And that's not something that a lot of schools necessarily see happen, right? And so I think that's, you know, we're taking advantage of making the most of the fact that we are a small, tight-knit community, and we're bringing that feeling online. And so those are just a few of the things we're doing. I guess another way of putting it is we're doing a lot of behind-the-scenes work to make sure that we're structured online, adaptable, sorry, that's the word I'm trying to say. So that if we go back into the orange or red, you know, we're going to be able to work fully out from home online in March, in April, May. Some of our documents were in the office, we couldn't get in. So, you know, things like that to make sure that we're a resilient organization behind the scenes, so that whatever happens for the rest of this year and next, we're going to be operating at, you know, 100% capacity, no matter the circumstances. And again, not necessarily the most fun and engaging thing, but I bring this up because I think it's important to know that, for students to know that behind the scenes, we're doing everything we can to make sure that we're operating well, so that next year, and maybe even next semester, there can be more of a focus on, you know, the fun events and more in-person things as we start to kind of renormalize a little bit. I say that in air quotes, as vaccines start to be administered, so, which is also very exciting. So,
yeah, that will be an exciting thing. And yeah, I mean, I almost like, I knock on wood all like every day several times right now, just because I don't want to, you know, I don't want to, you know, count the chickens before they're hatched, sort of thing. But totally. Yeah, we're all super hopeful for a vaccine. Yeah. I want to end on a personal note, looking forward to 2021. Do you have a New Year's resolution that you've been working on?
Oh, that's a great question.
You might not have had time to think about it yet.
I mean, there's lots of little trivial things like going to the gym more and trying to take care of myself. I mean, if we're talking personally, the big thing would just be, you know, self-care. I think that's something that everybody is learning a lot more about this year. It's you'd think that, you know, staying at home and relaxing, that is self-care. But when, you know, we're this far into the pandemic and all of our lives are taking place, you know, in our residence rooms or in our off-campus rooms or whatever, it's important to be aware of one's own, you know, physical and mental health. And so I think that I definitely personally face burnout quite a bit this year, and I need to be careful of that. And I think that, you know, the whole team, everybody right in the community, and that includes students with their, you know, full course load and faculty and admin, everyone's been facing burnout. And so I think that if there's ever going to be a year where we all have the same, you know, New Year's resolution, I think it might be this year, and I think it's going to be self-care. And so I really hope that I'm not the only one thinking this way, and that everyone else is considering this a lot going into the new year, as we're kind of on the home stretch getting out of this pandemic.
All right. Jonathan Ferguson, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Erica.